Ladies and gentlemen, here at the Palace Hotel, and all those that are listening through our teleconference, and our friends in China, Wenfu, I welcome you to the public meeting of Legends International Holdings, and we plan to explain the results of our feasibility study that was done by Wenfu, and we hope that you will enjoy it, and hope through today's meeting that you'll have a good understanding of where Legends is heading and the bright future that we see for ourselves. In order to avoid any disruption to today's proceedings, I would ask that those present ensure that their mobile phones are switched off and to refrain from using tape recorders and any other electronic device. We're not scared that you should have a tape recorder because the next 7 days you're able to listen to this meeting, but it will be disruptive to the equipment and to what we're trying to achieve here. Firstly, today we will provide a presentation of the results of the feasibility study into our phosphate project in Queensland. Then there will be questions to our Wenfu friends who unfortunately could not make it today because of visa problems, but have been very kind to make themselves available late at night in China. And after that, there will be an ability for you to ask questions to myself, our team, and possibly the Chinese delegation. Before we start the program and the presentation, I'd like to introduce to yourselves to our team. I am Joseph Gutnik, the President and CEO of Legend. On my immediate left is Craig Michael, who is our Executive General Manager. On my far left is Legend's Project Manager, Ed Walker. Each one of them will be talking today. I would also like to introduce the Wenfu team that can be seen on the screen. Firstly, we have in the middle Mr. Zhu Kawa, Wenfu's Manager of International Business. Here he is standing up.
Morning.
Then we have one of the most important people in Wenfu. Even though she's not the CEO, she's the Chief Accountant. So her name is Mrs. Wang Keisha. She is. And then we have Mr. Wang Sankey, who is Wenfu's Chief Engineer. So we have people representing all different aspects of the Wenfu group. Before Craig presents, I would just like to make a few points and maybe corrections, misunderstandings that are presently amongst some of our investors. And I'll start with a few points about the feasibility study and then some other general points, and then I won't be too long, and then I'll pass over to Craig, who will give the presentation. Firstly, we've had a lot of queries about the feasibility study, why we're using a price, a selling price of $531, when the present price of MAP and DAP is $470. And the answer is a very simple one, if you know what's going on in the industry. Australia is very far away from the rest of the world, and the price of MAP and DAP is based on Tampa, Florida. So the price is FOB $470 a ton, Tampa, Florida. To bring MAP and DAP, which is a fertilizer nutrient made out of phosphate, to bring it to Australia today costs $70. So you have $470, which is FOB Tampa, and $70 to bring it to Australia, which makes it $540 at today's prices. In Australia, there's a very strong map and DAP market. There's only one other fertilizer company that produces map and DAP, and that's Incitec Pivot. 700,000 tons of map and DAP is imported to Australia every year. So if we, by the time in 2013, by the time we have our plant functioning, the price will either be higher, and also there'll be a greater demand, according to CRU in Australia, for map and DAP. More than 700,000 tons. We are going to be producing 600,000 tons. A large portion of our production initially from our first stage of our first plant will be sold in Australia. So therefore, we will be receiving this price, $540, $531 comes out on a 10-year average of shipping and map and DAP prices, according to CRU and other experts. So therefore, even though in the United States, map and DAP may be $470, in Australia, it's $530. And so it is in Australia, Australasia, and Asia. The price of map and DAP is not $470. It's like in Indonesia or other countries, much higher. So it comes out, it's $510, $520. It varies according to the shipping, according to the place where we're selling. So we have an added advantage producing in Australia that we're able to get a higher price. And our competitor, Incitec Pivot, charges not only the $530, which is a separate topic and a discussion, but a lot higher price. So it's not a question at all how we could be receiving this price of $531. So that's a question that's been asked. That the price is $470, why we put down in our feasibility study $530, because that's the most likely price or close to it that we will receive for our nutrient product, phosphate products of MAP and DAP. Another very positive aspect of our feasibility study that doesn't exist in the United States, that doesn't exist in other Asian countries outside of China, which is a special expertise that Weng Fu has, and Craig will talk about it in his presentation, that they're able to produce aluminum fluoride. And we are able to, as part of our building of our MAP and DAP plant, to produce an aluminum fluoride. And if you see in our announcement, it adds 28.5 extra million profit to the bottom line. It's a aluminum fluoride is in demand. In Australia, there's a 20,000 tons a year demand. It's very hard to get. We can produce 15,000 tons, and the price is going around $1,800 to $2,000 a ton, and there's a shortage of it. Weng Fu has the expertise in this MAP and DAP plant, in this phosphoric acid plant, sulfuric acid plant, to be able to produce this aluminum fluoride. So therefore, we have an added advantage, and we haven't pointed this out in our feasibility study, of another $45 to $50 a ton. So besides the fact that in Australia we're getting $530, you can take out off our costs, which are $320 in our feasibility study, another $45, $50 because of this aluminum fluoride that we're producing. It's a byproduct, just like in a copper deposit. You may have some gold. It adds to the profitability, and the costs are less. So therefore, because we have this extra $45, $50, even though we may have a disadvantage, U.S., because of our logistical position in Mount Isa to the port of Townsville, this makes up that deficiency. The cost between Mount Isa of Townsville to transport our MAP and DAP by train is made up by this extra profit that we have, and so therefore we are amongst the lower producers in the world because of this credit that we have. So not only can we get a better price because of Australia and the surrounding Asia, we're also able to produce at a much lower price. So these are two very important points that make our feasibility study, our project, very robust, very exciting, and if there is ever a, in the future, a rise in the price of MAP, and that make the project a bonanza. I heard from a leading trading company, the head of a leading trading company in the fertilizer industry, they told me, Joseph, watch a number of years ahead, phosphate deposits, especially an integrated phosphate plant where you have phosphate rock, they're not going to be only phosphate deposits, they're going to be real gold mines. I like to hear that, of course. Another question that has been asked is, we were talking about the last number of years, direct shipping ore, we're going to ship, and we put deadlines, timelines, and we didn't meet them. There's a very simple reason for that, that over the last, from 2008 onwards, there's been a real downward spiral in the price of phosphate rock. And for us to have undertaken shipping rock at present prices, it just wouldn't have been economical. Prices are too low, $120, because of our logistical position. Unless the price is around $135 a ton or $150 a ton, it's just not worth it. And therefore, that's why we looked towards MAP and DAP with the help of Wengfu, where there's a much larger margin. There is capital to build such a plant, but at the end of the day, the return is much greater, the profitability much greater, and the risk much less. So that's why direct shipping ore is not on the agenda at the moment, unless the or any shipping of rock is not on the agenda unless the price of rock increases. And even if the price of rock was to increase short term, there's always the danger that it can come down again and it would be a very risky type of business to enter. However, in the future, in our D3 deposit, if we were to beneficiate and have a certain market, a certain price, then we would certainly be interested in also exporting phosphate rock. That brings me to IFCO, our Indian partner. Of all types of rumors going about our relationship with IFCO, we have a very strong relationship with IFCO. IFCO are a 15% shareholder in the company. However, IFCO are customers. They buy MAP and DAP. They buy rock. They don't build plants. Wengfu builds plants. So therefore, our relationship is strong with Wengfu at the moment because of their expertise, because of their world-renowned ability and performance in building plants. Therefore, we're with them. We're also with IFCO, but we're with IFCO if we've got the product, when we have MAP and DAP, we certainly will try to sell to them, and if we ship rock, they certainly will be in the forefront of our customers. And at the moment, they are loyal customers in the future, and also loyal shareholders, and there's absolutely no risk between the company and IFCO. It's exactly the opposite. They're encouraging us to do what we're doing. Finance. Everyone's asking us, why haven't we started and announced a finance deal? We haven't finished our feasibility study, so how on earth can we announce our finance at the moment? Once we're finished our feasibility study and the next stage of the feasibility study, which is doubling and trebling the capacity of the plant in Australia, then we will talk about what's happening in finance. We are confident that after the total completion of the feasibility study, that at that time Wengfu will make a decision of the size of their investment, the size of their involvement, the size of their financing. They're not going to do that until the full feasibility study is complete. At the same time, even before this feasibility study, the initial feasibility study, has been completed, we had numerous international fertilizer companies literally pushing down the door to try and talk to us about getting involved in our project. So we are very confident that by the end of the year, first quarter of next year, we will have something definite to say about the financing of our project. Finally, the spin-off that we were talking about in regards of spinning off our diamond and base metal gold interests, there's been a delay that was not of our doing. There is certain requirements that have been put on us from the Australian Stock Exchange in regards to the spin-off that we have to call a extraordinary general meeting of North Australian Diamonds, that they should approve of this transaction. We don't see any issue with it, but it takes time. We have to have independent expert reports. We have to call a meeting. So that's going to take time. We believe the date will be somewhere in November where the cutoff date will be. And in regards to shareholders who will be eligible to the rights to this new company, and that everything should be wrapped up by the end of the year. On that note, I'd like to pass you on to Craig, who will give you a full presentation on our project.
Thank you, Joseph. Ladies and gentlemen, shareholders and future shareholders, it is with great pleasure that I get to present to you today the results of this feasibility study conducted by Wengfu. This is a major milestone for Legend, and one that I'm sure you've all been eagerly awaiting. Here at Legend, we've always known that this is a very good project. The phosphate fundamentals are very strong. We've got 1 billion tonnes of rock in the ground, and we know that it makes a world-class fertiliser. The results of this feasibility study, however, have exceeded our expectations, and we now know that this is a great project. So sit back, relax, enjoy your breakfast while I explain exactly why this is a great project. This picture on the front cover actually is quite fitting to be using to start with, because this is actually where there used to be a beneficiation plant sitting right here, and this was the old Rompad in 1973. BH South, who first discovered these massive phosphate deposits here in Australia, they built a 100-tonne-a-day beneficiation plant just to prove up their feasibility study that they did, which concluded positively that they can make a world-class phosphoric acid map and DAP. This is where it is. They dismantled, obviously, in 1974 when they decided to head down to Phosphate Hill and develop that project. But this is also going to be the region in the coming years where you'll see another beneficiation plant, and one considerably larger than the one that was here. This is the usual disclaimers that I'll leave for you to read at your leisure. Some brief snapshots of the board and the development team, which some of these handsome individuals are sitting up in front here already, and Joseph's already introduced you to them. So these are the highlights of the results of this feasibility study. First of all, it was completed on schedule at the end of last quarter, and it confirms to Legend the technical and financial viability of this project. It's going to generate $11 billion US dollars in total revenue over 30 years, $2.6 billion in total free cash after we've paid our operating expenses and after tax, a pre-tax IRR of 25.5%, and a pre-tax NPV of $1.5 billion. Average earnings before interest and tax of US $151 million, and average annual free cash flow after tax of $113 million per annum. Here we have a 210 cash operating margin for our DAP, but once you include the revenue, this 28.5 million extra revenue that we're getting per year from the sale of the aluminium fluoride, this makes our cash margin at $257. The total capital cost of this project, $808 million, and a payback period of 5 years. This summary really goes over what I've just mentioned in the highlights as well, so I'll leave this one for you to read at your leisure. As Joseph has mentioned already, we have had a change of strategy. We're now gone from being a producer of lower value phosphate rock to a producer of higher value fertilizer products. Back when we started this project, producing 5 million tons of phosphate rock was a good strategy. The price of rock had a good margin. The world changed in a heartbeat and the margins disappeared. So why have we changed? Well, we have to capitalize on this excellent opportunity we have by owning a phosphate rock deposit. Owning a phosphate rock deposit gives us a significant advantage over producers around the world. We'll be an integrated producer, and integrated producers are the lowest cost producers around the world. The fact that we are going to add value to the product means that our margins are higher and we're going to be less sensitive to the volatility in the market. We obviously still have an option to sell rock if the conditions are favourable in the future. So this diagram really explains the base case scenario that's been studied in this feasibility study. We've got Mount Isa in the middle, which is going to be the hub. This is going to be the phosphate fertiliser complex. Here we're going to have a sulfuric acid plant. We'll have a phosphoric acid plant. We will have an ammonium phosphate plant and an aluminium fluoride plant. All these four will be sitting on a pass of land in Mount Isa. Going to this complex, we'll have rock coming from Paradise North. We start with Paradise North because it has a core of high-grade material. All we have to do is screen out the silica, slightly upgrade the P2O5 content, and we can use this material for 5 years. So we'll send this on trucks down to this complex. It's about 160 Ks here. Then after 5 years, we'll utilize a beneficiation plant that we'll build here, and this will be for the remainder of the life of the project. In our study, we've used 30 years as the mine life. This is quite a conservative number. When we do some more validation drilling for the rest of the resource, we know there's a huge resource there already. This could easily go to 50 years, mine life based on the extended resources. Townsville is where our port is, out to the east here. It's about 980 kilometres out to the port. We'll be shipping in ammonia, about 100,000 tonnes per annum of ammonia, and 200,000 tonnes of raw sulphur to go to our sulfuric acid plant to make the sulfuric acid that we need for the phosphoric acid plant. So once all these ingredients get mixed together here, we end up shipping out to the port of Townsville 600,000 tonnes per annum of MAP or DAP. The plant will be able to make ratios of either one, up to 600,000 tonnes of either, and 15,000 tonnes per annum of the aluminium fluoride. This is a table showing our mineral resources. As you can see, we have plenty of rock. There's 1.3 million tonnes in historical estimates that were done by BH South and IMC Corporation in the 1970s. Over the past couple of years, Legend has been doing revalidation drilling of these resources. We've converted this much so far into JORC-compliant resources. This is enough for us at the moment to estimate reserves, which we'll be doing later on in the year. For this study, we've just used the Paradise South and the Paradise North resources for this feasibility study. And this provides the 30-year mine life. For Paradise North, we've actually used a higher cutoff to report here to get the material to 27.6%, uses the 25% cutoff, and actually gives us 9 million tonnes. So we've got 72 million tonnes at 16.9% plus the 9 million at 27.6% to give us 81 million tonnes used in this feasibility study. The rest of these deposits, We're saving them for a rainy day. we'll be able to use these in the future for future expansion, for standalone beneficiated rock projects. There's plenty of material here to use in the future, and we know we've done tests on D-tree and also Paradise. We know they beneficiate well, and they make acid, and they make MAP and DAP. Just to show you where we are in Australia, we're in northwest Queensland. This is Townsville. This is where our port is. And heading out to the west is our mining leases. We have three mining leases here, one at Paradise South. This is the old Lady Annie. Paradise North, this is where our high-grade material is, and D-tree out to the west. This is the road that we'll be sending the trucks down to the Barkley Highway. This is a sealed gazetted road for heavy vehicles. This one also takes heavy vehicles. It takes copper concentrate from the Lady Annie copper operations here down to Mount Isa, which is where our phosphate fertilizer complex will be. You can see this black line heading up through the deposits here is a 220 kilovolt power line coming from the Mica Creek Power Station in Mount Isa. This is where we'll source our power from for the beneficiation plant and also for our fertilizer complex in Mount Isa. The water will be coming from Lake Julius via transfer to Lake Mundara. And the rail line is heading from Mount Isa out to the port there. The mining of these deposits will be contracted to an international mining company. To estimate the costs and the mine life, we've done our own pit optimizations and scenarios on mining using excavators and scrapers for the ore layers, excavators for the overburden. Paradise North, as I've already mentioned, will be for the first 5 years, and then Paradise South for the remaining years. This is our mining rate for Paradise North. It will be 1.25 million tonnes per annum, which after dry screening will have about an 80% mass recovery to have a million tonnes per annum going to the phosphoric acid plant at around 29.5% B2O5. Once we switch to Paradise South, we'll be using this resource. We'll be mining at a rate of 2.5 million tonnes per annum. The strip ratio is a lot lower here, but it will be going through a beneficiation plant. After it goes through the beneficiation plant, there's a percentage mass recovery of about 40%, which brings us to a million tonnes per annum at 32.5% going to the phosphoric acid plant. Just on the processing and logistics, we'll be sending the material down in these road trains down to Mount Isa. I've covered this already, so I'll skip to the next slide. This is the fertilizer complex in Mount Isa. The sulfuric acid plant, it has a capacity of 600,000 tonnes per annum. It'll be taking the sulfur from the port of Townsville, burning it in air and combining with water in the usual process to make sulfuric acid. One of the benefits of having a plant like this is that it actually produces heat. It's an exothermic reaction, so we can use this heat elsewhere in the plant. It will be used for cogeneration of electricity within the plant and used for heating to help concentrate the phosphoric acid. In the phosphoric acid plant, we'll be using the dihydrate wet process as developed by Prayon. It'll have a capacity of 300,000 tonnes per annum. This process is known to be mature and reliable and improves phosphate recovery. Basically, this plant will be grinding the rock, reacting with the sulfuric acid, filtering out the gypsum, and then concentrating the phosphoric acid up to 48 to 50% so it can be used as an input for the MAP and DAP plant. This is the MAP and DAP plant. It'll have a 600,000 tonne per annum output. It's using a pre-neutralizer and pipe reactor process developed by INCRO. The process really here is that the acid gets neutralized by the ammonia. It gets granulated into the diammonium phosphate and monammonium phosphate, screened and dried, and then sent to the containers to be transported down the railway line down to Townsville. The aluminum fluoride plant. This takes fluorine out of the phosphoric acid process, which is generally typically a rejected byproduct. It's the fluorosilicic acid that comes out of the phosphoric acid, and Wengfu have a licensed proprietary technology which converts this fluorosilicic acid into a gas form, the anhydrous hydrogen fluoride. Then they have a dry process which mixes with aluminium hydroxide to produce the aluminium fluoride. Now, you're probably wondering, what is this stuff and why is it so good? Well, it's used in the aluminium smelting industry. In Australia, there's quite a large industry for producing aluminium metal, and they like to use this product because it helps in the electrolysis cell when they're separating the aluminium from the aluminium oxide. It lowers the temperature, it improves the electrical conduction, reduces the mole ratio, if that means anything to any of you. But basically, it means that the aluminium industry likes to use it because it lowers their costs and it makes it more efficient to separate the aluminium from the aluminium oxide. So it's actually in quite strong demand. It fetches about $1,800 to $2,000 per ton US. Currently, Australia imports all of this material from overseas. There was no plant like this in Australia. So there's quite an opportunity here for Legend to produce the 15,000 tons per annum here and either sell in Australia or overseas, wherever we get the best price. Most aluminium fluoride is made from fluorospar, which is it's a mineral that's depleting around the world. Most of the plants are actually closing. Over a third of the plants have either been closed or will be closing in the future. So this is a good opportunity to use this byproduct. It really doesn't cost us much more in operating expense to produce this byproduct, but it makes a big difference to the revenue and the addition to our cash margin. In terms of infrastructure, I've already mentioned the roads that we've got there, sealed roads on the Barkly Highway and then the McNamara Highway, which already takes road trains. The power demand, I think I've mentioned a little bit, but it's estimated to have 24 megawatts of demand, which will be offset by 8 from heat generation within the plant. In the MAP and DAP plant as well, it actually produces heat and energy along with the sulfuric acid plant, so we'll be taking that heat and recycling it and using it within the plant. Also, in the future, actually, the Australian government have announced that out of the $1 billion that they're putting towards infrastructure funding, one of their priorities will be to have transmission lines built along green energy corridors. And the number one project that they highlighted was in the Northwest Minerals Province, which is taking power from Townsville out to Mount Isa. So there's going to be plenty of options for power in the future. For our water demand, our allocation comes from Lake Julius, which has apparently approximately 10 gigalitres of water available, which we'll be using in the phosphate fertilizer complex in Mount Isa. And out on site at the beneficiation plant, there's unallocated water in the aquifers, which we'll have access to. And for future expansions, we're looking at some new dam sites as well, closer to the site. So our capital cost estimate. We've just broken it down by area here. $7 million for local mine infrastructure, $120 million for a beneficiation plant. This is including contingencies. Transport infrastructure, which includes upgrading the haul road, some facilities at the terminal for storing ammonia, and also some specialized rail equipment. The phosphate fertilizer complex incorporates the four plants, which I've described previously, and a provision for around $55 million for working capital. So this estimate, we were happy to see that this is in line with what British Sulfur Consultants has put in their 10-year forecast as what a phosphate fertilizer complex generally costs, according to their estimates. They were actually talking about a 736,000-ton DAP plant with a 350,000-ton phosphoric acid plant and a captive 1.3-million-ton rock mine. So once you actually take into the account the capacity difference between our plant and their plant, if you take out the aluminium fluoride plant and the working capital, which they haven't got in their estimate, we're actually within 10% of CRU's estimate. So that was encouraging. Our operating costs, we've split it by our input costs, conversion and the transport. You can see that all adds up to around $321 per tonne of DAP. But this figure does not take into account the fact that we're getting extra revenue from our aluminium fluoride. It does take into account the fact that we're operating that plant. So because those operating costs are included in this cost, we have to take into effect the revenue that we're generating from this byproduct in our cash margin. So in effect, this is reducing our operating cost by $47.60, or increasing our cash margin, whichever way you want to look at it, by $47.60 per tonne of DAP per year. So our effective operating cost is actually $273. This puts us in the lower end of the cost curve for any of the integrated producers around the world, and especially the non-integrated producers, as I'll show you in later slides. The margin, when you look at our DAP price, estimated long-term DAP price that we're using of 531, as Joseph has mentioned, and I'll talk a little bit later in the following slides of why we've used this import parity pricing mechanism. But with our effective operating costs and this DAP price, we have a margin of $257. CRU also estimates that to justify the building of any new phosphate fertilizer complex, you need about $180 margin. So as you can see, we're well above this margin, and it gives us a bit of room to move. This is my favorite slide, because I think this really shows quite well what it means to own a phosphate rock mine, what advantage it gives you if you have a captive phosphate rock mine and you don't have to buy it and put it on a ship and bring it from overseas. As you can see, this is just based on our input costs. Legend's estimates are in line with any Central Florida company. And Indian companies, they have to import the sulfur, they have to import the rock. The main thing I want to show in this graph is the rock. As you can see, it's over three times than any integrated producer. This slide highlights that if you're one of these guys, you have a significant advantage over the non-integrated. These numbers here are based on our feasibility study and use long-term averages. The Florida estimate comes from CRU's published numbers from April of this year, and same with the India estimate. It's from May this year. So I'll come back to that slide. Because it's my favorite slide, I'll come back a bit later just to prove some other points. On the marketing side, Wengfu has done a detailed analysis in their feasibility study for us on ammonium phosphates and aluminium fluoride. They've used data from the International Fertilizer Association as well and British Sulfur Consultants. Phosphate demand is expected to grow at 3.1% per annum over the next 5 years. A lot of this growth, over 70% of this growth, is in our region. It's in the South Asia region, the East Asia region. We've used a 10-year long-term price in our financial evaluation, which is within 2% of British Sulfur's estimated 10-year long-term price of $445 per tonne FOB, US Gulf in Tampa. This is a little explanation of why we've used the import parity pricing mechanism. This is what happens in Australia currently. People who are buying phosphate DAP and MAP in Australia, they are paying the equivalent of an import parity pricing. So Australian farmers are actually paying this price at the moment. The current price is 470 FOB Tampa, and Australian farmers are paying the equivalent of what it would cost to ship it from Tampa, which is about $70. They're paying about $540 in today's prices that they're paying this. So we've used the same import parity pricing mechanism. We've used a 10-year forecast given to us by Braemar Shipping Services. By about 2018, shipping costs are estimated to be quite high from Tampa to Townsville in the $100 mark. This gives us an average over the next 10 years of $86. The long-term Tampa price, as I've mentioned, is $445. You add these together and you get a $531 per ton of DAP imported into Townsville. And I've mentioned the aluminium fluoride already, so I'll move on from here. So where is our market, and who are our competitors? This slide here is showing all the countries that have DAP and MAP facilities, DAP and MAP plants. All these blue dots here are showing DAP and MAP facilities around our region. The blue dots mean that they don't own a rock mine. These are non-integrated producers. The triangles here are showing integrated producers that do have rock at their disposal. So when you look at this and you wonder who our competitors are, if I just jump back to this previous slide, you can see that any of the non-integrated producers, we have to cut them out because they're not really our competitors. As you can see, these numbers are also showing the trade deficit or surplus in terms of MAP and DAP in these countries. Most of these countries are importing more DAP and MAP than they produce. Now, looking at the integrated, there's only three integrated producers, and out of all of them, there's only one that actually has a surplus in this region that is exporting DAP and MAP. This is China. China has reserves of phosphate rock. They have many DAP and MAP plants, and they export this rock to this region. So this is our really only competitor in this region. When you look at it, our costs compared to Chinese costs, we're actually on a par with China because their phosphate deposits are also inland. They have to send their MAP and DAP products via rail over large distances, 500 to 1,000 kilometres, to their ports. They're also known to have unstable exporting policies. As you know, in 2008, the export tariffs went up to 135% in China, and this severely cut down their exports by about half. And this can happen again in the future. Australia imports 700,000 tonnes of DAP. So this is why we're looking at this market straight away, because there's an opportunity here to offset some of these imports, especially with the price that we can get from Australia. We just look at the next slide. This is showing how many imports there are in our region, in our own backyard, which is where we will be selling our products. At the moment, this whole region, based on about 10 countries I've got here, 10 million tonnes of MAP and DAP is imported into this region. China's exporting about 2.4. So the rest of it is coming from outside this region. There's about 8 million tonnes coming from outside the South Asia, the East Asia, and the Australasian region. These forecast numbers are from CRU, is 10-year outlook report again. And if you go out to 2018, you can see that we'll be importing about 12.2 million tonnes of DAP by that time. Now, China's exports, you think, might be increasing to try and help some of that increase in demand, but it's actually decreasing. CRU estimates that there'll be about an 8% decrease by 2018 in their exports. So this means that there's 10 million tonnes of MAP and DAP that need to come from outside this region. Where is it going to come from? There's bits coming from Russia. There's bits coming from North Africa. There might be some coming from the large Ma'aden project in Saudi Arabia. But it's not going to be enough to make up this 10 million tonne MAP and DAP deficit. So where does it come from? The biggest exporter of MAP and DAP in the world is the United States. So how do we compare when we look at where the United States, the Tampa price, compared to Australia? One thing about Tampa compared to Australia, it's a long way away. So Australia straight away has a freight advantage. If you look at some of our neighbours in our region, Indonesia, Malaysia, South Korea, Japan, Pakistan and India. These are the rates they're paying to get DAP into their country, $62 a tonne. If you look at the FOB price at the moment for DAP from Tampa, it's $470 today. So they're paying $532 to get a tonne of DAP into their country. What about if it came from Townsville? $25. We can get it from Townsville to Indonesia. This means that if you back calculate this to our FOB price, we're getting a stronger price than you would FOB Tampa. It's because of our freight advantage, because of our location, we have a $37 extra margin to play with. So really, in our region, no one can really compete by being in your own neighbourhood, being in your own backyard. As these numbers clearly show, we have a market in our neighbourhood, and our only other competitor in the region, their exports are shrinking, and there's not enough to come in. So this will be our market. It's a big market, and it's close to Australia, and we can get good prices to sell our rock. Sell our DAP and MAP. Just to talk about some of the environment and tenure at the Paradise project, our mining leases, they'll be granted very shortly. We've got three mining leases out there, Paradise North, Paradise South, D-Tree. There's a number of acts that we have to comply with, the Environmental Protection Act and the Mineral Resources Act and the Native Title Act. We're currently going through this process. With all of these, D-Tree and Paradise North are the closest ones, and they'll be imminent within the next month or so. And Paradise South has been advertised, public notice. So these are all on track to being granted. I'll leave most of the slide for you to read at your leisure anyway. Just to tie up what's happening with the project and the implementation schedule. It's just a timeline to show you when this is all planned to begin. Construction is to start in quarter two next year, and commissioning by 2013, and start up in the quarter two 2013. So we'll have shovels in the ground, and we'll be digging the rock and sending it to our phosphoric acid plant in around 2013. Just in terms of valuations and recent activity in the market, we've just had a look at the Bayovar project, had a look at what's been spent in the past on this project and converted that just into a dollar per ton of P2O5, just so you can compare where Legend could be once we are closer to production. $300 million was the original investment into the Bayovar project. And at that stage, it had 52 million tonnes of P2O5 in the ground. So if you do the math, you get to about $5, $6 per tonne of P2O5. With the recent transaction by Mitsui and Mosaic, they paid about $660 million for 60% of the project. When you bring that up to 100%, it values the project at $26 per tonne of P2O5 in the ground. So they're obviously at the mining stage, they're producing. So these are some of the ranges that you can see that you can apply to our tonnage in the ground, which if you do it on our total historical resource is 215 million tonnes. If you look at the $5 valuation, that gives us about $1.2 billion valuation for our tonnes of P2O5 or $5.50 per share. If you just do it on our JORC compliant resources, you end up with $355 million or $1.57 per share. Once we get further down the track and the what-if scenarios, we're obviously going to convert a lot more of this into resources and into reserves. But if you just use our JORC numbers at the moment, at $25, we're looking at a $1.5 billion company or $7 per share. So really, on this basis, you can see that there's a lot of upside potential. Our current share price is about 96 cents. So Legend has a long way to go, and there's a lot of value in the future. What are our future plans? Our future plans are to look at expansion, look at doubling and tripling the base case scenario. In the next studies, there will be preliminary designs of the beneficiation plant included. We'll be looking at other specialty chemical products. Obviously, we've seen what the aluminum fluoride can do to the bottom line. There are other products like this, like concentrated phosphoric acid or specialty phosphate chemicals that Wengfu has technology for. So we'll be looking at some of those in the future just to see where else we can add value. Going down the track, Wenfu will be finalizing their level and size of equity involvement and their facilitation of financing after the completion of the feasibility expansion study at the end of quarter three this year. In terms of financing, we have been approached by a number of other international fertilizer industry corporations. These discussions were obviously going to progress aggressively over the next few months to ensure that this project stays on schedule and fits with our timeline that we showed you before. Just some of the corporate information that you can read in the presentations that you've got there. Our market cap is currently $217 million. These are our top five shareholders. And I'll leave you with that. So I hope you enjoyed the results of this feasibility study. They're obviously quite positive and very exciting. It's an exciting time for Legend. And I'll pass back to Joseph to take any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Craig, for that articulate and informative presentation. Can we get the Chinese there? I'd now like to call on Ed Walker, who is our project manager, who has had a lot of interaction with the Wenfu team, and he has a number of prepared questions that would be typical questions that would be asked. There is a language difficulty, and later on, if we're able to, we'll try and, from the crowd, put some questions to them. We'll see how time's going, and also to ourselves. I'd like to call on Ed Walker now.
Good morning. First of all, I'll just confirm with Mr. Zhu. Can you hear us? You can? Great. Fantastic. Yeah, we can hear you very loud and clear. So the technology works, so that's a positive start. I just wanted to introduce, Joseph's already introduced, but Mr. Zhu, sitting in the centre, is the Deputy Manager for International Business Development. To his left, Mr. Young is the Chief Engineer for Wenfu, one of the most senior members of the Wenfu industry. And to the far left, we have Mrs. Wang, who is the CFO or Chief Accountant for Wenfu. I've been to China on about five occasions over the last 6 months, and the delegation from Wenfu have been to Australia on three occasions now. So we know each other well, and we've worked very closely together over the last 6 months on this feasibility study. It's been very much a partnership between Legend and Wenfu, and one we're very happy that's produced a fantastic feasibility study. Just on Wenfu, I just wanted to just bring up a couple of points about them for those that aren't familiar with the company. They're one of the largest fertiliser producers in China. Their key facilities are in the province of Guizhou, which I probably haven't pronounced correctly, but towards the southwest of China, about 800 to 1,000 kilometres inland. They have a number of captive rock phosphate mines, as well as chemical and fertiliser plants, where they make a whole range of fertiliser products, which totals about 2.5 million tonnes of finished products per year. A couple other key things about Wenfu, they actually heavily invest in R&D to the tune of $50 million per year, $50 million US dollars per year in R&D, and they spend that money wisely on things like aluminium fluoride, which our project will benefit from, along with a range of other specialty products. So their technical expertise in fertiliser is really second to none. The other thing about Wenfu is they sell to the Australian market. They understand the region. They're actually approved, they're aqueous approved, and aqueous is the Australian Quarantine and Inspection Service. So all the way back to their Chinese facilities, they're approved by the Australian government, who have very strict guidelines on importation of fertiliser. So Wenfu understand intimately the market in our region, which has been of tremendous advantage to our project. So on that front, I'm just going to ask a couple of questions of Wenfu. I'll obviously put them to them in English, and where appropriate, Mr. Zhu, who will answer in English, and for some of the other questions he'll direct to his colleagues, he'll answer in Mandarin, and he'll then translate. So, Mr. Zhu, the first question for you is, are you satisfied that the feasibility study is positive and robust?
Good morning, everybody. I think Mr. Yang will give the answer in English or technical issue, so I will not do the translation for him. Mm-hmm. But for some financial question, probably I think Mrs. Wang will answer in Mandarin. I will do the translation for her. It's okay?
That's great.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm. Okay. Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are very glad to answer the question. The first question answer is, Wonfu and Legend have been working extremely closely over the past 6 months to complete the feasibility study. We have visited Australia on a number of occasions to understand the project and provide our world-class expertise. As a consequence of this close relationship with Legend and our diligent approach on this feasibility study, we are extremely satisfied that the project is both positive and robust. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. The next question I want to ask is, how does this project compare to some of the other projects you've been involved with around the world?
In many ways, the Legend project is similar to our own phosphate development in Guizhou, China, particularly the size of the rock resource and the potential for value addition for special phosphate project products. We are confident that the Legend project will enjoy the same success as ours. Over.
Thank you. Now, this is a very important question, and I'm sure this will be directed to Ms. Wang. Do you think it's likely that Wengfu will make an equity investment in the project and also provide assistance with project finance?
I'm currently assisting the project feasibility of the expansion project, like to double or triple the scale of the project. And also we will also decide the size of the investment decision following the completion. Also have a very strong relationship with Chinese banks. Thank you.
Do you support the, or do you agree with the project timelines?
Okay, these timelines are typical for phosphate development, and we are comfortable that they are appropriate for the Legend project. Thank you.
With your experience in the Australian market, can a portion of the MAP and DAP be sold into the local market?
So I will answer your question because I'm a marketing guy. Offer has been supplying fertilizer for Australian market, I think for past 10 years, and we have a very good understanding of the supply and the demand and also supply chain dynamic. Currently, Australia imports around 750,000 tons of DAP my products per year. As a consequence, we see that the project has a robust local demand for its products, both for Western Australia and Eastern Australia. Thank you.
Can you explain the aluminium fluoride process and the market for this product?
Okay, the production of aluminium fluoride has environmental and ecology benefits for the producers. The process takes the potential rejected byproducts, pollutants from the phosphoric acid process, and turns it into a marketable product, which is currently in strong demand by the aluminum industry. In the phosphoric acid reaction process, a common byproduct is fluorosilicic acid. Wonfa have chosen the process technology, which uses concentrated sulfuric acid to convert the fluorosilicic acid into AHF. Wonfa has developed their dry process technology, which reacts the gaseous AHF with the dry aluminum hydroxide power to produce aluminum fluoride. This is a significant market for this product in Australia to be used in the aluminum smelting industry. Thank you.
Okay. The last question is, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing this project?
As the project, the price of fertilizer is the key factor in the viability of the project. But Laotian has a captive supply of phosphate rock, so we believe they are somewhat insulated from the price reduction when compared to other projects around the world.
另外，Laotian的一定标准其实是DAC价格下跌的。我们目前的预期水平，本项目意思其实可行的。In
addition, Laotian has demonstrated that it is viable even should DAC price falls to levels below our predictions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Wang Fu. Are there any questions?
Who's importing phosphate in Australia now?
Firstly, the major distributor and producer of phosphate at the moment is Incitec Pivot. They export because of the seasonal issues, and they also import. And so Incitec Pivot is one of the importers. And then there are other distribution groups, Highford and other groups that are in Australia, that those are importing and distributing around Australia.
I mean the sources. Where does the phosphate come from?
A lot comes from China. Of course, there's small amounts coming. We're talking about MAP and DAP. The main source is from China, but there is coming from the United States, from Mosaic and from others. But the main, largest amounts are coming from China.
Thanks for your presentation, Joseph. Wanted to know, what are the main differences or changes between the feasibility study results that you've communicated today relative to your prior expectation? Thanks.
one of the main differences is the aluminium fluoride that we're able to get this credit. So that's very important. Another one is the capital costs that we thought may have been more than that amount, but the expertise and the ability and experience of Wang Fu worldwide, whether it was Marden or other projects they've been involved with, allows with their expertise, and they've seen how to be able to make sure that the capital is used properly and efficiently. And generally the price, the Australian market, which is such a captive market, so we can see that we can get good prices here in Australia. Most importantly, Incitec Pivot is the only producer of MAP and DAP in Australia. The Australian government, the ACCC, is very sensitive about only one producer. So the government will be very supportive of another fertiliser producer in Australia and will definitely allow us to have a share of that market. They won't allow Incitec Pivot to take more of the market because of the idea and concept of a monopoly. So that allows us to be pretty certain that we will get a large portion of the Australian market, and the farmers are looking for a competitor in Australia. So it augurs well. The Australian market augurs well with us, and I presume that applies to the Asia and Australasia. They're also looking for other suppliers besides China. If you want to ask a question to the Chinese delegation, if we're able to communicate it, normally we have an interpreter with us whenever we're talking. But if someone wants to ask a question, I think that be happy to try and answer. Mr. Zhu? Yes, I'm getting a yes. Is anyone like to ask a question?
So I'll ask this question to the Chinese. The expansion study that is being done, can you describe a little bit of what are the key things you're looking for, and why is that a step towards deciding on financing? Why can't the financing be decided with the current study?
Can I repeat the question? They would like to understand what's happening and what are you doing about the expansion and what are you basing it, and also why do you have to wait about your investment decision till later on and won't make that decision now?
So first, wait a moment, let me translate it to Mr. Yang and Mrs. Wang first, and then I'll give the answer. seeking for future. Yeah.
What would we call the queen in general, the dear queen, to the queen in general, or woman,
what we are doing now, so we will consider the possibility for equity investment. For expansion. So do you satisfy this answer? So it is clear?
Not really. So you're saying that.
Ready to follow? Let him do it. Okay, that's fine. Did you expect it?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. That we didn't. First of all, we didn't understand what are you basing the expansion on? What are the criteria that you're basing on? What are you looking for when you're going to expand? The ability, the amount of power, electricity, water, availability of ammonia, sulfur.
We should have brought our interpreter here.
So because we finished the first stage of feasibility study, but for expansion, we already have done something utilities, water, electricity, the gas, ammonia, sulfur, and so all of these things. I think it's good enough for expansion, for sure.
Also, we're looking into a beneficiation plant. Yeah, I can answer you this. I'll try and answer the second answer that what the president and CEO, Mr. Wong, has told me in regards to their investment. They're waiting. They want to, before they decide how and what and the amount and the scope, they have to see what it could involve. So they have to know what amount of investment, and they have to do before they go back and decide it in the board. They can't go in the middle and start making a decision. They have to understand what equity, what amount of money they wanted to commit. Do they want to go to 1.2 million MAP and DAP a year? Do they want a 1.8? So it's impossible to report to the board, make a firm decision without knowing the scope. That's quite a logical point of view from their part. So they're going to look at the Australian market, the amount where they can export, where there's no risk, and then they'll decide whether it's a million tons of MAP and DAP, 1.2, 1.5. So they have to assess the marketing side of it. They have to assess the funding, the amount of money, and then they can come to a final decision. I think they would, if we would have an interpreter, it would be easier to be able to get the question across and the answer.
Is the investment to be done in phases? Like you could do first a phase of the current feasibility and then wait a few years and then do the second part?
Our legend's wish is to start in stages. We'd like to first start with 600,000 tons of MAP and DAP, get that established, and then go to the next stages. But when you build a plant, you have to be able to have a vision and provide for what's going to be in the future. So when you build a 600,000 ton MAP and DAP plant, if you're going to build in the future a 1.2, you have to know about it, because then you'll build it and you'll provide for the expansion later on. If you're not going to expand, you build it in a different way. So that's what they have to decide. That's why you have to know to what extent we're going to expand the plant.
Thank you.
A question also for Wang Fu, and that is that are you satisfied that phosphate rock is the only type of rock that will satisfy the world demand for fertilizer?
I am confident that phosphate rock is the only rock. Is there a substitute for phosphate rock in the world for fertilizer? In all your research and development, have you found that there is a substitute?
Well, they firstly want to know the relationship in most of the stream the size of the Philippine Yasin.
这个无论是这个效果指标或质量指标都是非常严重的。Yeah, so we have done the test of the rock and the verification test in our laboratory. We found that the results of the acidulation and the construction of the fertilizer is so perfect. Rather than we think it's somehow better than borate rock.
We'll get you an answer. I don't know. I don't think they understood. The question was, is there a substitute for phosphate rock? Can you use another rock? Can you use copper? Can you use any other type of rock?
No, cannot. So for fertilizer, the phosphate rock is a major raw materials. You know, it's only phosphate can be used in the phosphate fertilizer. No, you cannot use any other rock.
Well, that answers the question.
My Mandarin is not that good, so may even get you into more trouble. Can you look at the capital cost as well as the operating cost? How much of it is exposed to non-dollar? Just say, assuming that, let's say, Australian dollar swing a different way.
We've used an 85 cent. We're using Westpac, who was given an average. That's an Australian bank, a large who was given in the next 10 years an average price of 85 cents for the Australian dollar. So they think it may in the short term go higher, but over the next 10 years they think the average is 85 cents or lower.
Right, but.
It's written there in the report.
If we look at that $800 million, how much of it is Australian dollars?
It's only this.
I know, but you are building plant in Australia,
yes.
So you're paying Australian dollar labor.
Correct.
And construction. So
we're converting at 85 cents.
Right, but if there's a swing of Australian dollar, your CapEx is going to go up much higher. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Correct.
So can you, percentage-wise,
if the Australian dollar goes up by 10%, our CapEx will go up by 10%.
Well, some of the equipment is dollar.
Some of the equipment is imported from China.
Right. So can you start to go over, like, what percentage of it is non-dollar based?
We certainly
use Australian dollars for Australian countries. And what percentage? Well, I would just say that whatever the exchange rate, we're using an exchange rate, a 10-year average of 85 cents. So whatever, if it's U.S. dollars, it'll be, and it costs us more. If it's less, it's less. It just depends on what the rate is on the time when we buy. We have to find an average price, which we have to work on. The average price is 85 cents. Everything that we have in Australian dollars, we purchase in Australian dollars, 85 cents. If we have U.S. dollars, then it's U.S. dollars. At the moment, our funds are in Australian dollars because we work in Australia. So 95% of our funds is in Australian dollars. And that's the normal thing to do, is to keep your funds in the when it comes to labor and working capital in the country that you live, because then you're not exposed to the vicissitudes. However, at the time when certain machinery is going to be bought in U.S. dollars, so we'll put aside the amount of money in U.S. dollars. It's something that we'll work on during the period of when we raise our funds.
whether we're purchasing in Australia, whether we're purchasing overseas, whether we're doing it in building in Australia or whatever it is. But we'll assess it then. But when it comes to our Australian dollar exposure, we've given the 85 cents to the US. It may be if we raise it from a US bank funds, then we'll keep it part of the money in US dollars. So it's just a matter of taking a view from the banks at that time where the funds should be put. It's not something that we're going to speculate on. It'll be something where what the banks advise should be done.
I have just a question on financing. Are there some examples where Wang Fu has made investments in projects similar to yours? And if so, can you give us an idea as to the size of the stake that they typically take? How much would typically be the equity piece or the debt piece if they've done anything like this before?
This is Wang Fu's first international. They changed their policy a year and a half ago to look for investments overseas, so this will be their first investment overseas outside of China.
Well, with regard to that then, are there some examples where they have done projects in China where they've made investments in similar projects to this? And if so, what size stake have they taken and what would be the investment? Is it typically equity or debt?
I know that I can't give you a definite answer on that. I know they've purchased other companies and made amalgamations, but I don't know, in Chinese terms, I don't know exactly, I don't think they were listed companies, I don't know exactly the terms of how that took place. We did talk to some of the major shareholders behind Wang Fu, and they, which are state-owned groups, conglomerates, and they told us they were quite open for investment, large investments and financing overseas. These are like people like CIC and SDIC and major groups. So they didn't see it as an issue for Wang Fu to invest in a large way overseas. But I couldn't tell you what they internally did. I know that they have expanded a number of times.
Mr. Gutnick, the plan called for a capital payback period of 5 years. That would be on a straight-line amortization about $161 million a year. Does Wang Fu envision this being a debt deal in terms of financing or a combination of debt and equity? Has that subject been broached yet?
Yes, but we haven't finalized anything in that regard.
Okay.
Well, normally it's debt to equity in these type of deals. But
sure.
We haven't looked at the percentages or made a firm decision in that regard yet.
Do you have any philosophy behind using project financing versus using the public company treasury stock to finance this deal?
Well, you want to, being a major shareholder of the company, you want to do as less equity as possible so you don't get diluted. But you have to judge at the time what's the best route and what's the best return for the company.
With the existing shareholder, is there any anti-dilution measure, anything that such a make Wang Fu's investment a little more complicated?
No.
So there's no restriction at all?
No. Well, the major shareholders are myself, Soros, Atara, Perella Weinberg, so four major shareholders, and there's no restrictions in that regard. But everyone will be interested to finance the project in the best possible way with the least dilution. We thank everyone for the attendance and look forward many more meetings as the project advances. Thank you for your attendance. Thank you for your attendance from China.
Thank you.
the taller that's the use of some really cool.